Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. Linda Cohen along with Drs. Eastwood and Brangman. And we've just been talking about all the difficulties with regard to decisions at the end of life, but also with people who are, experiencing significant amounts of dementia and how we make decisions. Dr. Brangman, you said something at the end of the last session where we talked about we really need to respect the wishes of the individual patient. But if they are in a position where they can't really express those wishes, what alternatives do we have?
Well, then we hope that they have designated someone to be their healthcare proxy. And a healthcare proxy is someone who would step in and make decisions for that person, knowing what they would want. So it would hopefully be someone who was close to the patient and understands what their values are. And so they would make those decisions in their place.
So clearly, though, we need to be thinking about those kinds of things, hopefully before we lose our marbles totally. I mean, is that kind of
that's
the point
exactly
here?
It. And this applies to anyone of any age, really. Although young people, it's hard to contemplate that you're going to die.
They actually probably resist the notion of even getting involved in filling these forms out.
Well, it's frightening, I think, sometimes. Frightening for all of us to contemplate, or for most of us to contemplate death. But the important thing is to have conversations. Actually, in my experience in answering consultations at University Hospital on these matters, I have talked to young people who said they were watching television and maybe one of the medical shows, the ER or something, and one said to the other, well, if this happens to me, I wouldn't want to be like this. And that is the conversation many times, not just young people, but people of any age. So it's important to have conversations, and you can't predict exactly what your situation will be as you approach death, but you can have conversations that develop certain scenarios and express your wishes.
The large term for this, is advanced advanced directives.
Yes.
And that's what falls within that are things like a healthcare proxy.
Well, let's advanced directives are some of the things I just was talking about. Just oral representations to friends, relatives, even your physician.
Your wishes.
Another would be a healthcare proxy form, which there's an official New York State form. I actually am looking at it right now. But you can make up one yourself
That's what designates an individual as the agent to help with those decisions.
It designates a person to act on your behalf. Now, that person that you designate does not come into action as the healthcare proxy agent until you no longer have capacity yourself. That's a very important distinction. And so that person, maybe it's your wife or your husband or a friend or a son or a daughter, that person still acts as your spouse or your relative, but does not act as your healthcare proxy agent until you no longer can speak for yourself. And then there's a living will. That goes into more detail about specifics of what you might want or might not want.
Give me an example.
Well,
You might not
want to have a tube into your lungs, commonly called an endotracheal tube or sometimes a tracheostomy. Now, sometimes it's very hard to predict whether you may want or not want that because the situation that requires that is unpredictable. So some people who are nearing or very, very sick, that's an appropriate thing. Some people, it may not be appropriate. In the state of New York, the document that has the most legal weight is a healthcare proxy agent form. And I say that has the most legal weight, but it does not require a lawyer. It does not require a notary. Even copies of the original are okay. What it does require is a person who is signing it out, the future patient, and it requires a couple of witnesses.
But in terms of what it actually requires is trust on the part of the patient that the individual that they designate will not only be available to make those decisions and consistent, but really truly reflect
your wishes as time goes on. And that seems to me a real challenge for a patient,
yeah,
especially if they're entering a potential where they would not have the capability to make those
decisions. Patients, or I tell healthcare proxy agents that you are not making decisions for yourself. You're making decisions as if you were that other person. That's a concept that's easier to say than to actually experience and act out on.
Right.
And I find that families in the heat of the moment, when they don't have direction, it makes it very, very difficult for them, and they often feel guilty that they're not doing the right thing. So I think that having this discussion and making these decisions ahead of time is actually a great gift for family members who are very much stressed. Often we have children coming in emergently from other parts of the country trying to figure out what's going on. And I think that it's just very hard to kind of come in and make all these decisions without some kind of guide or basis.
Well, there's a universality to this. Obviously, the universality is that we will all die. So there's a universal need for this kinds of documents or designated individual for all of us, in a sense, because mm-hmm. I could walk out, be hit by a car. Mm-hmm. I mean, any of us at any point in our lives are vulnerable. So it speaks to the need for these advanced directives for the general population.
Everybody.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically getting back to our end of life and patient with dementia, does it have any other specific, you know, does it have a stronger need here or a particular?
Well, there are some issues in particular that need discussion because they don't reverse the underlying disease and they don't change the end process. So a good example of this are feeding tubes. Often in the middle to end stages of Alzheimer's disease, we see people have trouble swallowing. It may initially be that they pocket food in their cheeks and don't swallow it, or they take a long time to chew, or they take out things that are real tough to chew from their mouth, like steak or something like that. They start drooling. Then we might see them have problems drinking water, so they'll sputter and cough a lot. And we know that swallowing is a very complex process, and oftentimes, as Alzheimer's disease gets worse, our swallowing center in our brain gets jumbled up and it doesn't work well. And so we start to see someone who isn't taking in enough food to keep their body weight. And so frequently we see people start to lose weight. And then the question comes up, what are we going to do? And there has been so many studies done that shows that feeding tubes, which is really a tube that's placed into the stomach, and then somebody gets a liquid formula, and that is put right into the tube, it isn't an ideal way, because at that point, most of us are not used to absorbing liquid food. We're used to absorbing solid food. So by putting this liquid in, we often see people get diarrhea. They have problems absorbing it, so even though it's going in, their body isn't extracting the calories and the nutrition.
It creates problems.
It creates problems because the fluid can go into the lungs and they can aspirate and have problems breathing. So it becomes an intervention that was created to help provide nutrition to people. But in this particular disease, it doesn't help them live a high quality life. It can prolong the process a little bit, but it doesn't change the endpoint.
Yeah, and that gets right back to that kind of crucial question, the ethical question. Should we be doing that? Should we be knowing full well, first of all, the issue is, will the intervention improve what quality of life they have? And clearly with feeding tubes, that's not the case. But beyond that, there's a deeper question. There is a clear path that they're on. And they're now stopped. It's almost nature's way. And I don't know if I want to sound so, negative about it. But nature's way of saying this is time. They are now not able to eat. So should we be intervening in that way?
So ethics is like beauty. It's in the eye of the beholder or the brain of the beholder sometimes. And there are individuals who believe that life at any cost, and that's emotional cost as well as, dollars, is the goal. They happen to be in the minority, but still, we have to respect that point of view. Many other people think quality of life is important, but I think almost everybody comes to a realization that there is a point where we are going to die, because that is universal. And then the question is, at that point or at that time, are there things we should be doing in what might be called a futile situation? I mean, a situation where any intervention really is not going to improve the underlying condition.
And the other issue is it kind of flies in the face of how you're trained as a physician. I mean, the Hippocratic Oath is to sustain life and do no harm. So
that's actually not true.
So then clarify that.
Well, that's to do no harm does not appear in the Hippocratic Oath. That's actually a phrase that came up about in the 1700s. But what the Hippocratic Oath does say is to avoid harm. It's an important distinction because physicians and other healthcare providers harm every day because we know that the harm is an acceptable risk to achieve a greater benefit. I'll give you an example. A surgeon cuts, and that's harmful, but presumably the benefit is greater than the harm. A medication may cause some side effects. Let's just take the dramatic example of chemotherapy for cancer. A lot of harm there, but we harm because we think the benefit is greater.
Good, excellent points. So you're basically, how would you sum this up in terms of the patient? What kind of advice would you give to families of patients with dementia, or a patient who's had a new diagnosis of dementia in terms of the path ahead?
Well, we have to give them some time to adjust to the new diagnosis, but then we try to go through some of the challenges and decisions that might lie ahead so that they can begin thinking about it. They don't necessarily have to make all of the decisions in one sitting, and it can be an ongoing point of discussion. But they have to talk about things like where they would want to live, how long would they want to stay in their own home, driving, feeding tubes, they would want surgery or dialysis.
How about more just preventive things like flu shots, blood tests, x-rays, mammograms, those kinds of things? Do you do all of those things?
Again, it's a very individual process. I have a lot of patients with and without dementia who say they don't want any more mammograms or pap tests. Flu shots are pretty much given to everyone. There's a question on how much benefit it is toward the end of life. It might be better for everyone caring for that person to get a flu shot than to give it to that patient. So those are, again, very individual decisions that are on the list of things that we talk about.
And from a public health standpoint, there's all these issues about cost. I mean, you did allude to the fact about cost. I mean, the reality is, and I think it's been said, that we spend probably the most amount of money in the last few days or weeks of life than we spend throughout someone's life on health care. So there are a lot of decisions that, in a way, fall to the medical community to help a family make throughout this process.
And that's where the challenge lies. And it's always helpful if we know if we're doing things that are consistent with the patient's values and wishes.
Well, I think that really says it all. Do you have any closing comments, Dr. Eastwood?
No, I think it's been a very good discussion. And I hope listeners have been taking note. The first thing you do if you haven't got a healthcare proxy is you talk to one that you trust and talk about your wishes at the end of life. And then write it down or get an official healthcare proxy. You can get that online just by Googling healthcare proxy New York State or something like that.
And clearly, if you're a family who is facing this issue of dementia, find yourself someone like a Dr. Brangman who can help guide you through this very difficult process. Well, Dr. Gregory Eastwood, Professor of Bioethics and Humanities and Professor of Medicine at Upstate Medical University, and Dr. Sharon Brangman, Professor of Medicine and Division Chief for Geriatrics at Upstate Medical University, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts, your insight, and advice with us on this very difficult and challenging topic. We have to take another short break, but there's more HealthLink on air ahead. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.